Kamaistaistaya
Rita Jnana
Prabhajyante Devata Tam Tam Niyamam Ashtaya Prakritya Nayata Swaya. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is said in the Bhagavatam that less intelligent people who have lost their spiritual sense take shelter of demigods for immediate fulfillment of material desires. Generally, such people do not go to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they are in particular modes of nature, ignorance, and passion, and therefore worship various demigods. Following the rules and regulations of worship, they are satisfied. The worshippers of demigods are motivated by small desires and do not know how to reach the supreme goal, for the devotee of the Supreme Lord is not misguided. Because in Vedic literature there are recommendations for worshipping different gods for different purposes. That is, a diseased man is recommended to worship the sun. Those who are not devotees of the Lord think that for certain purposes demigods are better than the Supreme Lord. But a pure devotee knows that the Supreme Lord Krishna is the master of all. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that only the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the master and all other are servants. Therefore, a pure devotee never goes to demigods for satisfaction of material needs. He depends on the Supreme Lord, and the pure devotee is satisfied with whatever he gives. So, some may be thinking today that here we are teaching the pure instructions of Bhagavad Gita, and yet it appears that we are worshipping one of the great demigods according to rules and regulations. Is this a contradiction? Is this hypocrisy? If we have a proper understanding, according to the teachings of Gita, it is not at all. Krishna explains in the second chapter, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrai Gunya Bhavarjuna Nirdvandvo Nitya Satvasto Niyogakshema Atmavan, that factually the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. Very rarely do we find in the Vedic literatures the propounding of pure devotional service. Because generally, human society is materialistic. And the path of vairagya, renunciation, is not at all acceptable by the general masses. But rather people, they simply want to enjoy their senses and live a better material life. So what to do with such people? The Lord is all merciful. Therefore, He wants somehow or other to elevate them also. So therefore, Krishna explains, most of the Vedas are for those particular people who are materially attached, who have no sense of surrender, who do not care anything for a pure heart or a pure mind, but simply want a nice family, a healthy body, nice wealth, and everything else is secondary. We find even in society today, when people want to choose a mate for their son or daughter, it's time for their marriage, the first consideration, they should be in our caste. The second consideration, they should be very wealthy and very affluent. The third consideration, they should be highly educated. The fourth consideration is they should be a devotee of God. What does that mean? The demigod worshippers. That's what it means. What they actually want in life is not pure devotional service, not surrender to God. They don't want their children to go back to Godhead. Well, they do, but that's a very bottom priority. The first priority is our family prestige, and that they will live a very, very affluent, prestigious life with affluence. And they will not be hungry, and they will have a nice house, and they will have nice cars and nice servants. Huh? The Vedas are mainly for those types of people. Because 99% of society practically is like that. Even in the Western religions, although they worship God, they worship Him primarily, 99%, as a demigod. They don't approach Him for pure love, for pure devotion, for surrender. How can I serve You, my Lord? Give me money, give me good family, give me wealth, give me prestige, give me good health, overcome my enemies. Huh? Material benedictions. Therefore, for such persons who Krishna considers distorted by material desires and less intelligent, He gives a whole spectrum of scriptures by which they can at least be approaching a higher power, at least be regulating their lives with certain restrictions, and gradually elevate themselves higher through the modes of material nature. From the mode of ignorance, there is ghastly type of worship. For those in the mode of ignorance, the Vedas prescribe slaughtering of innocent animals. Better to do it under restriction than do it completely unrestrictedly. At least you become a little sane, a little civilized, and at least you're accepting the authority of God in the way you're doing it. So gradually you can go from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion. From the mode of passion, you worship various demigods for wealth, for business, for all these powers of material enjoyment. Gradually you come to the mode of goodness, where we become very charitable, very pious. And then we find Krishna explaining in Gita, Sarva dharman puritya jamam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papi vyo moksha ishamimai. Abandon all these varieties of religion, just surrender to me. Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraiguna Bhavarjuna. That just give up all these Vedas and just follow the essential principles that I'm teaching now. Surrender to me. So therefore, what is the position of the demigods? The demigods are great devotees of Lord Sri Krishna, Lord Narayan. They are incredibly powerful, and they have just such a exalted service that they're performing to the Lord. And their service for the less intelligent people is to give them their material benedictions according to their desires if they perform the proper sacrifice. Therefore, the less intelligent, they worship the demigods for that purpose. But the devotees of the Lord they also offer all respect and honor to the demigods. How could they not? They have such an incredible service that they're being willing to surrender to, managing universal affairs of the creation. But a devotee will never approach the demigods for material benedictions, knowing that all they can give is temporary things. But a devotee understands that such great personalities, because of their connection as Vaishnavas, they are worshipable and honorable. And therefore, devotees approach such great souls just as we approach all great Vaishnavas, by getting their blessings. They can help us in our devotional service to Lord Hari. Rupa Goswami explains in the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu that although materialists, they worship Ganapati just for all good business success and good family arrangements, a devotee knows that Ganapati, his special service is to remove obstacles from people's path. A devotee does not worship Ganapati to remove obstacles on material path, but offers obeisances to Ganapati, please remove obstacles in my service to Lord Shri Krishna. And therefore, when Sri Ganapati is sitting in the entrance to the temple, when a devotee enters, he offers pranams. O great Vaishnav devotee of the Lord, as I am coming into this temple to worship the Lord of my life, please remove all of these internal and external obstacles from my path. And more than any other prayer to Ganapati, this will please him. Do you think he's satisfied when you're just making some business arrangement? I'm doing this puja, give me this. I'm doing this puja, give me that. How much do you think he's happy by you? You're just business contract. I'm giving you, you give me. Huh? You think he's satisfied to see us becoming more and more attached to material happiness? Not at all. He does it as an act of duty. But if you really want to please any of these great devatas, ask them for their blessings to assist in your loving service to the Supreme Lord Hari. It is not that we have to. It is explained, Devarshi Bhutapti Nirnam Pitrinam Nakinkara Nayam Nanicha Rajan Sarabatmana Yasharanam Sharanyam Gatomu Kandam Parititya Karatam, that if you just worship Krishna and his devotees, it's like watering the root of the tree. All of the great demigods, all of the forefathers, everyone is fully satisfied. There's no need. But there is a need to offer all respects to all such great personalities who are engaged in the loving service of the Lord. And because here in India, especially, people are so much addicted to worshipping the various demigods for material sense enjoyment, rather than teaching them to simply negate it all, teach them how to properly worship to really please your worshipable God and ultimately attain the supreme destination of divine loving service to Sri Hari. Because after all, the whole purpose of our temple is to educate people according to their nature and according to their position to attain the supreme goal of life in this world. Within the temple of our Guru Maharaj, we are not allowed to teach anything but pure devotional service. Dharma projita kaita vatra parama niramatsaranam satam. The Bhagavatam kicks out all sub-religious principles. Vedavyas begins the Bhagavatam by saying most religions, including the Sanatana Dharma religion, is dealing with sub-religious principles. But this Bhagavat Purana kicks them out at the beginning and deals only with unmotivated, uninterrupted, loving service to the Lord.
That is our only business. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was Krishna himself establishing by his own example how to live the life of the Bhagavatam. He was the very personification of Bhagavat. And yet, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living in Jagannath Puri, he was teaching us how to worship Lord Jagannath, Lord Sri Krishna, and how to worship in the way that is most effective for developing this pure consciousness by coming together and congregationally chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And that's all he did. He taught such profound philosophy to Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Prakashananda Saraswati, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. But the conclusion of all his philosophy is to simply surrender to the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna by chanting his holy names. And Srila Haridas Thakur, who was teaching by his example the essence of Mahaprabhu's teaching, was always absorbed in either chanting japa, immersing his consciousness in the name of Krishna, or preaching the glories of Krishna, or attending the wonderful Sankirtan with all the devotees, congregationally chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on his South Indian tour, we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita how whenever he came to the temples of any of the demigods, he would go into that temple, he would offer his worship, his prostrated obeisances, and he would pray to those demigods because he knew they were great Vaishnavas, great devotees. Even our own Guru Maharaj, who wrote this purport that we are reading today, one day when he was in Vrindavan, his devotees, they were thinking, oh, look at all these people that worshipping demigods. They were even criticizing demigods. But Prabhupada came into a Durga temple, and with folded hands, he started offering prayers from Brahma Samhita, glorifying Durga Devi, and tears started flowing from his eyes. One of the devotees asked, Prabhupada, why are you doing like this? He said, I am simply remembering how the gopis, they worship goddess Durga to get Krishna as their husband. Huh? And she was as such a great personality in the service of the Lord. The gopis approached her in this way. If Krishna is the object of your worship, if pure devotion to Krishna and service and surrender to Krishna is the object of your worship, then your worship is perfect. Otherwise, it is simply a source of bondage. Bondage either in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance. We read in the Bhagavatam about how the gopis, during the month of Kartik, which is just coming, they took a vow. They wanted Krishna to be their husband. Why did they want Krishna to be their husband? So they could just serve him without any other diversion in their life. They wanted to just give every aspect of all of their energy simply for the pleasure of Sri Krishna. They didn't want him as their husband so that they could enjoy him. They wanted him as a husband because in the relationship of husband and wife, there's a complete facility for total absorption and service to your beloved. Then nobody can interfere with that. Huh? So, it was the custom in India, as it still is, that when a woman wants to have a good husband, she worships either Parvati, Bhavani, or Durga, a good husband. Also, we find Sita, she was worshipping in the garden in Mithila, Bhavani. But what was her desire? Not give me a wealthy husband, give me a handsome husband, give me a husband from my caste, give me a husband from a good family. She was worshipping Parvati, give me Ram as my husband. Huh? Let me just have that relationship where I never have to be separated from Sri Ram. Where I can just give my whole life, my whole heart, simply for his pleasure. That was her desire. So in the same way the gopis, they were following the Vedic tradition, but with the highest principles. Every day they would go to the bank of Jamuna. They fasted. They would eat only once a day a preparation of rice, mung dal, boiled together, no salt, no turmeric, no spices. Because according to the Shastra, before performing a sacrifice, this diet is supposed to purify you from within. So they were practicing like this. And every day they would go to Jamuna and they would be holding their hands and they would be laughing and they would just be singing the glories of Lord Shamsundar. And when they came to Jamuna, they very happily, they made out of clay beautiful murti of Katyayani, Durga Devi. And they would worship her with incense and with flowers and with the ghee lamp. And they would offer prayers. Oh, Katyayani Devi, you are expert at giving good husbands to young women. Please, let us have Shamsundar for our husband. And they were all doing together. They were not envious of each other. They were not thinking, oh, if she gets Shamsundar, then I won't get. They were not like that. They knew that Krishna is unlimited and that Krishna could fulfill everyone's desires. So they were all together in great love and devotion, in great unity. They were worshipping Goddess together for Krishna, for seva to Krishna. You see, if they wanted Krishna's husband for their own material sense enjoyment, they would have all been envious of one another. They would be doing all tricks, you know, putting some impurity in the other person's offering. It's like that. Isn't that what materialistic people do? To get their own fulfillment, beg, borrow, steal, kill, cheat anybody, even your best friend. That's material life. But they did not want Krishna for their own pleasure. They simply wanted unalloyed service to Krishna. Therefore, there was no envy amongst each other. And this is a principle. If devotees are worshipping Sri Radha Gopinathji, but they have some material motivation in their hearts, I want to be president. I want to be the most popular. I want to have the best Mahaprasad. I want to have the best room in the temple. I want to have the most prestige. If we are worshipping the Lord with any material motivation, then even in the name of spiritual life, there's so much conflict. There's envy. Huh? There's competition, material competition. There's criticism, there's gossip, there's rumors, there's fault-finding. Huh? But the gopis taught, because they only wanted the pleasure of Krishna, they only wanted the service of Krishna, although they were worshipping the same goddess for the same person as their husband, they were holding hands together, they were dancing together, they were chanting together as they were on their way to do their puja. This is a principle. If we can somehow or other keep Krishna and Guru's desire first, there can be complete harmony amongst all of our devotees. But as soon as our own motivations come first, there will undoubtedly be conflict and all sorts of impurities within our own minds and so many disturbances within the unity of the devotees. Huh? This is the principle. So they were all worshiping together, and they would take their bath, and as they would take bath, they would be just chanting Krishna's names together. They were just having wonderful kirtan together. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. This way they were blissful, and their love for each other grew in proportion to their love for Krishna as it grew. That is the nature of bhakti. So just at the end of the month, when it was the full moon, they would go early, early in the morning, before the sun would even rise, to do their puja. So this was the last day of their Katyayani Vrat. And Sri Krishna, who is the Paramatma in everyone's heart, is always very anxious to fulfill the desires of his devotees. But how he fulfills the desires of his devotees, very difficult to understand. He does it in such a way that he perfectly brings everyone who is sincere to the highest position. So he secretly, as gopis were in Jamuna, they were with no clothes on, they were taking their bath, singing and playing and splashing each other, because they were such good friends. They had such loving relations with one another, because Krishna was in the center. Real love between two beings can only be when Krishna is in the center. When we have no hopes for our own material advancement. When Krishna is in the center, there can be love between us. When Krishna is not in the center, it's all kama. It's all material attachment. So as they were playing like this, they did not see, but Krishna came with some of his friends. They were very young. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the friends he brought, they were only like 3-4 years old. He didn't want to be grown friends, because that would be too embarrassing for gopis. So he brought little tiny friends. And Krishna also was very young. So, he stole the gopis' clothes, and he climbed up on a large kadamba tree, and went high in the tree. And then he addressed gopis. My dear gopis, I have taken your clothes. And now if you want them, you have to come and collect them from me, one by one. Gopis, they were in the water up to their necks, so that no one could see them, because they were very chaste and very pure at heart. They said, Krishna, we cannot come out of the water because we are not allowed to be seen without clothes by anyone, especially a male. So please, it is very cold, this water, and we are beginning to shiver. And we will get very sick if you don't give us our clothes very fast. And not only that, but we are very late. And if you don't give us our clothes the way we want you to give, then we will tell Nanda Maharaj, or we may even tell Kamsa. Krishna said, you go and tell Kamsa, I don't care. What could he do to me? And as far as Nanda Maharaj, he's an old man. He has no power over me. And they began to preach to Krishna, but this is not proper. Krishna said, whatever you may say, but if you want your clothes, you have to come. So when they realized that this is what Krishna really wanted. They came out of the water, but they were covering themselves with their hands so that the secret parts would not be seen. And Krishna was very amused to see their purity of heart. And he began to joke with them, but in a very serious way. And he said, "Ha, gopis, you have committed a great aparad, an offense to Varuna Dev, the goddess, the god of the waters, by bathing in him without clothes on. If you do not want to be punished by him, you must offer all respects to him right now by placing your hands together and putting them on top of your head." Krishna is very expert. So being very simple, cowherd girls, they accepted whatever Krishna said. But the great acharyas explained that they had no fear of Varuna Dev or any demigod. They simply knew if this is what Krishna wants, under this excuse we will simply satisfy him. And they offered obeisances. And then Krishna delivered all their clothes. And then he explained to them, "I know that you have done this whole 1 month fast and all of this pujas to the goddess Katyayani, Durga Devi, for the purpose of getting me as your husband. The fact is, a woman is never allowed to be unclothed before anyone but her husband. So because you have appeared before me in this way, I have accepted you as my wives." And he said, "1 year from today, on this very night, I will play on my flute, and you come to meet me. And we will enjoy Ras Lila. And there you will all take the role of my consorts." Now, less intelligent, materialistic people, they do not understand this wonderful Lila of the Lord. They think that what is this Krishna, Gopi Vasanohara, stealing Gopi's clothes? What type of God is this? They do not understand, Shukadev Goswami explains, that the Lila of Brajbhumi between Krishna and his associates is on the highest spiritual platform of divine ras. Only those personalities who are completely renounced, completely detached from even the slightest tinge of material enjoyment, can enter into this divine lila of Sri Krishna. The gopis had pure spiritual bodies, pure spiritual minds. And Krishna wanted to teach everyone that unless we allow our souls to stand naked before him without the external coverings of false ego, there are 7 material coverings. Bhumirapo nalo vayu kamano buddhareva cha ahankara iti ami bhina bhakti rashtita. When we have ahankara or false ego, we identify with a perverted intelligence that's always trying to satisfy that ego, with a mind that's always trying to hankering after finding the objects to satisfy the senses. We are all covered by so many material desires for gross sense gratification, for subtle sense gratification, profit, adoration, distinction, that our soul is so much covered that it cannot stand before God. But when we absolutely renounce all desires for gross and subtle sense gratification, and we completely humble ourselves, submit ourselves before the will of God with no ego, then we are fit to truly be enjoyed by Krishna. So even today in Vrindavan, the Brijbasis and the pilgrims, they go to this tree. It is called Chirghat. And they hang their clothes on that tree. seems like a ritual. If they're just doing it for the sake of doing it because everyone else is doing it, it is a ritual. But every ritual has a purpose behind it, and if we have the proper meditation and proper bhava when we perform that ritual, it's actually a great offering of sacrifice for the purification of our lives. So when the Brijbasis hang their clothes on this tree, this Kadamba tree at Chirgat, their idea is that these clothes represent my false ego, all my separate desires to enjoy. I hereby am showing you, expressing to you, that I want to give up all these things. Please help me. I pray, I beg you, help me become free from the shackles of this ahankar, free from the bondage of my material desires. Please take them all away and let my soul stand naked before you for your service, for your enjoyment. This is how the devotees understand this wonderful lila of Krishna stealing the gopis' clothes. As a sublime instruction, the materialistic, less intelligent people think that it's some materialistic, lusty affair between a young boy and young girls. But those who have proper understanding, they know that this is actually a pastime which is meant to completely purify us and rid us of all lusty desires. It is a pastime of utter surrender, of complete submission before the will of God, of complete abandonment to any material attachments whatsoever. The gopis gave up even the principles of their own prestige as chaste women and moral citizens of the society. For the absolute truth, they renounced relative truths. They simply wanted the unmotivated, uninterrupted service to the Lord. Therefore, the greatest acharyas worshipped the gopis as the supreme most examples of spiritual realization. Shukadev Goswami, he was a total renunciate. He remained within the womb of his mother for 16 years because he didn't have any inclination to come out and see the objects of the senses of this world. He thought that they were all putrid, disturbing, and nothing but a distraction from his meditation on Brahman. But the same Shukadev Goswami, who was wandering naked, when young girls saw him, they didn't even feel any complexity or perplexity. When Vyasadeva, when they saw him, they hid themselves when they were bathing. And Vyasa said, "Why are you hiding from me? I'm an old man, old enough to be your grandfather. And you're in anxiety because I'm seeing you bathing like this? But my son, who's only 16 years old, why you didn't feel any anxiety?" They said, "Because he's so pure, he doesn't even know the difference between a male and a female. But because you're a grihastha, even though you're pure, you still have to make this distinction." So this was the level of the detachment of Shukadev Goswami, and yet he is glorifying the gopis, the Ras Lila, the Gopi Vasanohar Lila, as a supreme realization of the highest bhaktas in all of existence. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was such a staunch sannyasi, he followed the principles of sannyas in a greater degree than anyone can possibly do. He was the supreme most renunciate. And yet, he worshipped the gopis. He said, "There is no spiritual worship, there is no love higher than that of the gopis of Braj." Therefore, unless we approach the science of Krishna consciousness by understanding from qualified, bona fide teachers who know what is being said and why, then we will simply be bewildered and we will be polluted and contaminated by hearing these pastimes rather than purified. Because we'll think them to be something ordinary, something mundane, something that has to do with lust or with sex. There's absolutely not the slightest tinge of material sex within any of the Leela of the Lord. It is simply the expression of the highest, purest, most pristine exchange of love between the liberated soul and the Supreme God. That is what we read in Bhagavat. So therefore, even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was in South India, he was offering obeisances to all of the great servants of the Lord, whether they be Ganapati, or Durga Devi, or Surya Dev, or Shankar. He saw them all as empowered representatives of the Lord. If anyone disrespects any demigod, it is Vaishnava Aparad, and it will incur terrible, serious disturbance in their spiritual life. Therefore, a devotee must offer all respect, all pranams. And a devotee can respect them in such a way to actually really please the great servants of the Lord by allowing them to help us, to assist us in their eternal function, the pleasure of Radha Gopinath. That is their supreme function. That is why they are giving all their benedictions to us just as a service to Radha Gopinathji. They are taking that post simply as a service of Radha Gopinathji. And if they see that we want to share that service attitude with them, and we want their help in that way, how much pleasure it gives. Just like some of us are preachers, we know if someone allows us to assist them to come closer to Krishna, it's our greatest joy in life. Right? That's the way all bhaktas feel. If someone comes and says, "Can you help me come closer to Krishna?" there's no pleasure we experience in the whole creation than having that opportunity to help someone love God. So if we really, really, really want to be pleasing servants of these wonderful, exalted devatas, this is the process. Bring me closer to Krishna, please. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. And when we come together for this purpose, the congregational chanting of the holy names, there is no greater worship. There is no way better of watering the root of the tree and nourishing every branch, every twig, every flower, every leaf. Because when we have a pure kirtan of the Lord, when everyone puts aside their egos and comes together simply to glorify Krishna and to help one another glorify Krishna, what happens is this. All the demigods, they all take part in that wonderful kirtan. It is a fact. They are all simply ecstatic to hear the kirtan. And wherever they are, dancing and chanting along with us. It is a fact. At least in their hearts. That is the power of the kirtan of the holy name. The sound vibration travels throughout the entire universe. And it's pleasing to all noble and respectable personalities. And all from Brahma Loka down to Patala Loka. When we have a wonderful kirtan, that sound vibration reaches the ears of Yamaraj, Brahma, Shiva, and everyone in between. In fact, it goes right up to Vaikuntha, the abode of Lord Narayan. It is transcendental sound. It is not something that simply must be heard but the ears, but it is heard on the transcendental plane by all such exalted persons. Therefore, this is the supreme welfare work, and it is the supreme service to to everyone. All of our forefathers, all of the demigods, all of the incarnations, everyone is supremely satisfied when we all come together to chant the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Lord Chaitanya prayed, "My Lord, if you want, you can embrace me. If you want, you can trample on me. You are free to do anything and everything you want. I am your servant unconditionally." Devotees come together to call out the holy names of Krishna. So we are very, very much grateful to Sri Radha Gopinathji that they have sent their beloved servant, Sri Ganapati, to, by his presence, add to the auspiciousness of our congregation of devotees. And certainly, I think he will be more happy here than practically anywhere else in Bombay. Because people who come to the temple, they will say, "Om Ganesh Pate Namaha. Please, you are a great preacher of Krishna. Please bring me closer to Krishna." And he will be so happy. He will be dancing with our kirtans. He will be chanting with our kirtans. He will be unlimitedly blissful, knowing that rather than simply giving benedictions which will cause bondage to people, he can give benedictions which will call the ultimate supreme liberation to all. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. So Krishna explains in Gita that those who worship the demigods with material motivation, they are less intelligent. And Krishna says they are condemned. Condemned to suffering in this world, birth and death. But those who worship for Krishna, for pure devotional service, they are most fortunate. They are real followers of Sanatana Dharma. Thank you very much.